Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, we are honored to have Kyle Settles talking about fatherhood with a chronic disease. Kyle is an educator, spa patient, and volunteer fundraiser for SAA. He's passionate about running, hiking with his family, beachcombing, reading, and listening to music. He also cares deeply about advocating for marginalized communities, something he strives to involve his five-year-old son, Jack, in, helping him grow with empathy and awareness. Since moving to Alaska in 2014 with his wife, Kyle's had the opportunity to teach and live across the state from Bristol Bay to the Aleutians to Denali. Today, they are proud to call beautiful Homer, Alaska, home. Kyle, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey, Jill, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So we're going to talk about a father's perspective. And I this is a really interesting one. I hadn't spent too much time thinking about this, obviously, because I'm a mother. But I think there are some really interesting things in here. I was hoping you could just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how your journey with spondyloarthritis started.
Yeah, of course. It's been a long journey, and most of it has been fantastic in a sense that I've been finally getting answers. So when we moved out to very rural Alaska about 11 years ago, I noticed just some weird funky pains, you know, like lower back pains, some tendon pains that just didn't add up with my active lifestyle and only being 29. Just kind of ignored it for a while and realized that the pain kept getting worse. And so I started advocating for myself and just trying to visit different specialists and rheumatologists all over Alaska. And it was just kind of, you know, chalked up to something that's in your head, which makes you feel like a crazy person. So that time was pretty intense, just trying to figure out how to advocate for myself and how to kind of push through that barrier. I eventually connected with Spondylitis Association, and they've been just a valuable resource over the last many, many years. I've teamed up with them a couple of times for some funding for certain projects, and it's just been really great to have that advocacy piece and just been really helpful getting some of the tools and resources from the folks there to like figure out how to kind of bridge the gap in conversation I was having with a lot of my providers. So it's been a long journey. You know, going from 11 years ago to now, I was diagnosed back in 2021. And so the last 4 or 5 years have been pretty spectacular, like kind of been on a really good treatment path. I know what helps and I know what hurts. And so trying to focus on the positives and what helps versus, you know, the alternatives. So it's been a really, really valuable journey. A lot of life lessons learned for sure.
That's amazing. So if I'm doing the math right, you went from living in the lower 48 up to Alaska, symptoms started, you were diagnosed, and somewhere right smack in that diagnosis, you also had your first child.
Yeah, and COVID, and living in Detroit. So when we moved to Alaska 11 years ago. We stayed 5 years, and then we got pregnant. So we're like, I guess we're going to move back to Michigan, you know, not realizing that we were building our own home out here. And so we moved to Detroit and our child was born. And then like 3 months later, the world shut down. And like trying to teach and trying to be a father and a husband while also dealing with chronic pain just was, it was awful. And so we actually hightailed back to Alaska that following summer. And then just shortly thereafter, I was experiencing some really gnarly eye pains. And so I flew into Anchorage to see an ophthalmologist and they diagnosed me with uveitis. And that's what kind of narrowed down this whole path. I mean, it's a pretty rare inflammation of the uvea, and there's only one of two causes typically. And so they were able to get me some testing and I tested positive for that HLA-B27. And from there, it's been kind of smooth sailing.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that story. I just wish you hadn't had to go the journey of 5 to 6 years. I'm all about the journey.
Oh,
the
sure.
journey to diagnosis is not one I want people to be going on.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So how's that been, and as a dad with a young child, and how does that change your perspective, do you think, as a parent?
For me, it's all about being active. I know, like when I was chatting earlier with you about, you know, things that help and things that don't, activity and movement is the biggest thing for me. And so for both my physical and mental well-being, I got to keep going. And so I think that having a five-year-old has been tremendous in that aspect. So I can include him in all of our adventures. We do beach combing quite often here on the Pacific coast. We are out hiking often, picking berries. I'm an avid distance runner and a cyclist. And so like doing all of those things as my child was growing up, and now he's at the age where he can kind of pick and explore different hobbies. So it's been really cool to like have a partner, you know, like when we're going out biking or beach combing. So that's been really valuable. And it just, it keeps me accountable at a different level that I wasn't used to before. And so it's been really invigorating just to make sure that, you know, I'm taking care of my body so I can help take care of my child.
That's an amazing perspective. I think a lot of us don't get that far in parenting, and that I think the movement, to me, the movement kind of keeps me alive. I think it keeps me from falling into the chronic roller coaster.
Sure.
So what do you, let me ask you, I'm gonna throw you a curveball here. So what is your favorite activity that is new that you've had to learn since you became a parent?
Favorite activity, I would say patience. But if you're thinking of more of like, you know, something that requires vigor or movement, I've been really getting into biking with my kid. And so Jack picked up, my five-year-old Jack, we got him one of those balance bikes at a really young age, and he just took off with it at like two. And so he was full on riding a bike by three. And I have, you know, I grew up riding a bike, obviously, but distanced that from myself for 20 years. And so once he started pedaling, man, we got all sorts of all the toys for him and the bikes and everything to hit the trails. And I got a little seat for him in the front of my mountain bike, which has been really cool. And so he's got the handlebars up front, the seat right up front, so we can go on longer adventures like that. And then just like, yeah, learning how to ride a bike again has been really exciting for me.
Yeah, and it's a great, like, do you find that biking versus running is a greater, like, lower impact way to get out, and just, it's a little less strenuous on the body?
I do. I totally do. You know, I could go cover dozens of miles on a bike versus, you know, five or six on the road. I've just unfortunately developed a healthy addiction to running. So
yeah,
I very much would prefer to be running versus biking, but totally less impact on the knees and the joints for sure.
Yeah, I hear you. I actually never ran unless someone was chasing me until probably 4 years after I was diagnosed. And I think the only upside there is that my knees were like, my knees weren't already destroyed at 40. But yeah, there's nothing like running.
Sure.
I just started back to it. So yeah. do you still get,
good for you.
Thanks. Do you still get, flares and everything, or experience the fatigue?
Yeah, it's my lower back. Like that's where things will flare up, and that's where things get uncomfortable. And running really releases that. Running and gentle stretching and like focusing on the recovery aspect of running has been really valuable. I'm 39, so I can't just pop up and run 10 miles. I have to actively prepare for that, and then also like chill out afterwards. So making sure I'm like stretching my body and loosening up before and after runs has been really great. But I noticed that I get flare-ups, not necessarily associated with like seasonal changes or temperatures, but I noticed that I'll get some pretty gnarly flare-ups if my diet's really poor, or if I'm just pretty sedentary for, you know, even just a couple of days.
Yeah, it starts to gel up in your joints, I think.
Real quick. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What is, when you're not feeling great, and I mean, as a parent, let's just say, as a parent, it's exhausting enough to keep up with a five-year-old. But when you are maybe like feeling a little bit under the weather or some fatigue and pain, how do you stay engaged with Jack when that happens?
I think reading has helped really big too. That brings a really good sense of calm to the both of us. That's, you know, not an impact activity, not really a movement activity, but I've noticed that reading has helped my mental well-being tremendously. And I was never a big reader. I grew up really disliking school and didn't like school at all. And then I decided to teach because I didn't like school. And so, like, I didn't really enjoy reading books until I moved to Alaska, when that was like, you know, became a source of entertainment through the dark and cold winters. And so I thoroughly enjoy reading with my kiddo and find a really great sense of just calm and level of clarity that's hard to find with other activities. So that really helps bring it down when, you know, things are a little bit too intense.
That's incredible. I wouldn't have thought of that one, but I love it. So this next question, as I was prepping, this may be one of the most important questions we've asked in any episode, not to put any pressure on you, but do you talk with Jack about your condition, and how do you explain it to him in an appropriate way?
I haven't. And I think that I don't know. You know, I haven't gotten to the point where we've had any sort of conversation like that. I think fortunately my body is in, you know, all things considered, pretty good shape. I take care of myself. I eat pretty well. I avoid the things that bring discomfort and pain. So I haven't had any sort of, you know, heavy conversation or even mentioning of my diagnosis. I chat about it with my wife pretty regularly. You know, it's kind of always on the radar. It's always something that's in the back of my mind. But I think my son has really helped just like push that to the back of my mind and push it a little further back. So it's not front and center. It's not a constant source of anxiety. So that's just a conversation we fortunately haven't had to have. I know someday I probably will. And when that time comes, I'll prepare for it. But I haven't really thought about it at all, to be honest.
Yeah, that's great. And I love that it, your connection with Jack decentralizes the disease a bit.
Totally.
It sounds like, yeah. So as you're parenting, are you concerned at all with Jack's prognosis, or it sounds like you guys really live a life that would support a healthy approach to the disease, even if he were to come up with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that, you know, I can't outrun. You know, we have a lot of health issues in my family, and a lot of those have sprung up in cousins of younger age too. So it's like, that's a constant source that I can't handle, that I can't change, that I can't alter. So trying to work through that on a daily basis is a challenge for sure. So just trying to focus on the, as many positives and as many things that bring us joy as possible for the time being.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's the, you know, I've noticed, I think there's more awareness of the disease, and
yeah,
we know so much more now than we did when, I mean, I'm a dinosaur compared to you. So
right.
We know so much more than we did when I was a kid, and probably even when you were a child. So there's a lot of opportunity to like get ahead of it if you're predisposed to it. Was there anything that you, in your journey after diagnosis and maybe after having Jack, that you made as an adjustment that helped you balance parenting and your health?
Yeah. And I think number one has been exercise and diet. I think like the older I get, the more I realize that there are certain things dietary that just don't hold value anymore. So like I used to love going out and getting a couple beers, you know, like going out have a glass of wine with friends. And if I do that now, I feel like it's just asking for a flare-up or asking for a disaster. And that's been the big life lesson, I think, is like focusing on what's going into my body because, you know, it's either fuel or it's either some sort of discomfort. So that has been a big one that I've teamed up with exercise and just activity has been really good. And I think too, coming from a public educator, so I've taught elementary school for 11 years. The last few years were really awful, to be very blunt. It's just the school systems in Alaska aren't very fantastic, and the climate for public education is really quite toxic right now. And so I actually backed away from that 2 years ago, and I've noticed my well-being has increased tremendously. And so really just taking a step back and finding what's more important and what's most important, and not being afraid to take risks and really focusing on just like the day-to-day mentality of what I do and what I choose to do.
Yeah, I think that's hugely important. My 2025 mantra has become the only thing that matters is how you feel. It's
Totally. Absolutely.
yeah, and it sounds like, I mean, I know that the last few years have been particularly difficult. I can only imagine in an area where there probably isn't as like there right there isn't as much access
Right.
for children and students, it's got to be tough. How is the access up there to rheumatologists and the care system?
Yeah, fantastic question. So I probably would have been diagnosed years earlier if we would have lived on the road system. So Alaska is a very large state, and most of it does not have road. And so when we lived in the Aleutian Islands, the only way to Anchorage, which is, you know, the main hub, the road system, is by flight or boat, and it's a very expensive flight. And so oftentimes when medical issues would come up, we would either hold off or ignore them entirely just because, you know, I didn't want to spend $1,200 to fly to go visit a doctor. And so in a lot of these rural and indigenous communities, the healthcare is essentially non-existent. Like they'll have a little clinic where they can often get traveling nurses. But once my eyes started flaring up so badly that I couldn't see, and it felt like there were razors in it, I was like, I'm going to spend the money to fly. So once you get into Anchorage and onto the road system, we have some really good health teams here. I got in with a really great doctor in Anchorage, and there's a really great rheumatology network in Anchorage itself. And so once that started, it was great. It just took a long time to start that. And a lot of that was me being stubborn and me avoiding some of the issues that I knew were there. But yeah, much of the population across Alaska has very little access to even, you know, average medical care.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah,
And
it's very tough.
how do you manage the emotional side of the disease? You seem to do it gracefully, from what I can see.
Yeah, I think keeping my mind moving. I'm one that if you know, I'm idle for too long, I find some sort of structure, whether that's positive or negative. And so finding that positive structure. And so for me, that's movement, that's exercise, that's reading, that's exploring, that's traveling. And so I think that the busier I am with things that bring me joy, the less my, you know, overall anxiety or concerns with my health are. It's a really easy distractor once I'm constantly filling my bucket with things that bring me joy. And, you know, living in Alaska in a coastal town has been fabulous for that because I'm 5 minutes from the mountains, 5 minutes from the coast, and 10 minutes from nobody. So it's really nice to have all of these things available and just know that they bring me joy.
Yeah, that's awesome. If you don't mind, I'd love to double click a little bit on this. As I mentioned, I don't think we've had a dad before. I'm sure we've had many of fathers,
Okay,
but we haven't
cool.
talked about dads too much. But just even as a man living with this condition, how do you navigate the cultural pressure to feel like strong and unaffected by the disease and everything's fine, or do you not feel that?
I think that I grew up in a really nurturing environment where there was never any sort of push for like masculinity, or there was never any like language focused on like this is what boys do, this is what girls do, boys don't cry, boys are tough, girls play with dolls. You know, I think that I grew up so distant from that, and it's just a really great environment that I never felt any sort of pressure at all growing up. And I think that that has been my saving grace. You know, I don't feel any sort of pressure associated with that. I don't feel any sort of inclination to suck it up, you know, to be tough for my kid. You know, I'm honest, I'm open, I'm very transparent with how I'm feeling, and my emotions are very much worn on my sleeve. And so I'm not afraid to express those emotions. I'm not afraid to cry when I need to. I think that a lot of that has to do with the way I was raised. And I also think that in the last year or so, deleting social media has been a huge game changer for me. And so that has just distanced itself from whatever the world expects of me versus what I need to do for myself.
Well, I love that despite not feeling that pressure, I think you just provided the foundation for other people to respond. Yeah, I think there's a lot to learn. And this is near and dear to me just because I've watched a friend sort of deal with that. And it's very difficult knowing that a lot of it comes out of like sort of our cycle of socialization.
Totally.
So thank you for sharing on that one.
Definitely.
Do you feel like the whole journey has taught you presence and patience and flexibility, particularly in parenting?
Yeah, it's definitely taught me grace and patience for sure. And being flexible. You know, early on, before I was even diagnosed, there were times where I couldn't walk. Like, you know, I was 31 years old and I had just like huge bone spurs on my ankles or just tendonitis all down my foot. And like, I would have to hobble, you know, as a early 30 something. And so it was very demoralizing, and it felt embarrassing too, because I could just not get those answers. So I think that early on, you know, like suffering through that has taught me to really value and appreciate the good that's coming out of this and the treatment and the path that I have going forward. And so as challenging as those 3-4 years were trying to get a diagnosis, I think ultimately I'm appreciative of the way that they panned out, because, you know, my body was like showing me that it was ready to give up, you know, like I didn't have much positivity. And so I lean on that a lot. Like I lean on those pretty miserable memories a lot, just knowing that, you know, I'm very grateful to be able to do the things that bring me joy and bring me happiness now, because, you know, several years ago I couldn't.
Yeah, it's I sometimes say I have like a speedometer from my body that mm-hmm. lets me know as soon as I'm going to hit the red lines.
Right.
And I wouldn't have it without spa. So I guess looking back, if you had to give advice to another dad, just being diagnosed at the beginning of the fatherhood journey, what would you say to him?
I think advocacy is huge, man. Like what I was saying earlier, I visited, I think, 4 or 5 different rheumatologists, you know, 3 in Alaska, 1 in Detroit, all like highly renowned, highly reviewed. And the overlying message that I kept getting was, you know, it's all in your head, or you need to stretch or do exercises. And that is just debilitating to hear when you know it's something beyond that, and it's something that you can't control without support. So I think the continued advocacy is the biggest piece, because it's so easy to give up. You know, it's so easy to just stop going to doctors when you're getting the same message over and over. And so I think looking for networks or looking for support systems or looking for outlets and just doing your own research to be your own biggest advocate is the biggest piece that I would give.
I think that's brilliant. And, you know, has your support system and family and friends in around you, do you feel like that's really helping you to parent and manage a disease and just manage life, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's been a, you know, we moved to Alaska, where we have no family. And so we are essentially have picked our own family in the last 10 years, which is great. But it's, you know, it's not the same. You know, it's not your people. It's not the folks you grew up with. It's not that support system. So it's a challenge. But fortunately, my partner, Amy, my wife, and my son, Jack, have been a fabulous support system. My dad is also a rock in my life. He grew up in Ohio, and they moved around and down. Like, he started running a lot. And I was always very curious about it. And I was thinking, like, why do people do this? You know, like, I would watch him run and it just looked miserable to me. But like, he was a big foundation in just my desire to keep moving and to keep exercising. And so even if him being 4,000 miles away right now, you know, that's still a huge support system. So definitely, definitely making sure that I'm picking those that help support me and bring me, you know, love and guidance has been really valuable. And I have that in my tiny little court here with my wife and son.
Oh, that's amazing. And I find too, I think with kids, I'm sure you see it already with Jack, and I watch it with mine. The best thing we can do as parents, I think sometimes, especially with in the context of the spinal arthritis, is like, if we're doing the right things from the perspective of best outcomes, they will follow in our footsteps, mm-hmm. kind of like you did with your dad.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. So last question on the hot seat. What message would you want to share with other dads out there navigating a chronic illness and raising young children?
I would say to keep surrounding yourself with people that you love and people that love you. I was chatting earlier about, I just needed a minute there. I was chatting earlier about empathy and really showcasing that with my son. And I think that we live in such a polarizing world now, and it can get so hard. It can get so heavy just to exist. And I think as fathers, you know, you had said it earlier, kind of that masculine pressure that so many people feel from the top down. And I think just you have to be around the people that you love. You have to find the people that love you regardless. And you have to just keep moving forward with what brings you joy. And those three things have been a game changer for me.
Yeah, I think that's now I need a minute. it is, I think it's how do you just lead with love, right? And that's
right,
that makes it less. But I agree, I think we've all got a lot of work to do as humans. It's not easy any day of the week, but that was absolutely beautiful, so thank you for that.
Sure.
I really appreciate
and I think, like, you know, I keep talking about advocating, and my mental health has been all over the place the last 5, 6, 7 years, you know, having a baby in the middle of COVID, living in rural Alaska, dealing with this. And so I had never grown up with any sort of like issues with depression or anxiety, but I feel like those happened overnight. And so once those kind of happened, a lot of issues with, you know, just generalized depression and just speaking out about it, like chatting with my wife, chatting with my parents, and just like them encouraging me over and over and over to just find a support system. And now seeking counseling for that has been really helpful. And I think that counseling teamed up with like the network I have with SAA and the rheumatology team has just completely flipped the script.
Yeah, it's, it makes such a difference. There's something we talk about a lot at totally. SAA. Mm-hmm. And it's this community of people that makes all the difference in the world. I lied. I have one more question.
Yeah, let's hear it.
And honestly, I would love to at some point talk a little bit more, maybe in another episode, about the experience of, you know, the marginalization of people in the healthcare system up there. I don't know if I'm prepared to talk it today, but I would love to like peel that back, because I think it's a really timely thing in terms of advocacy for people in this country and around the world.
Right.
Because there's, you know, I think Alaska is a really good example of some of the things that we need to address in our healthcare system. But my easy question, do you think vitamin D makes a difference in your overall mental health and outcomes being up in Alaska?
Yes.
Okay.
So my wife is, or not my wife, my sister's a nurse practitioner, and I was telling her, like, the amount, I can't speak of it off the top of my head, the amount of vitamin D I was taking in the winter, she's like, you need to at least triple that. And I did, after her advice, and totally, because the winters here are tough. As beautiful as it is, but it's still dark, and people aren't meant to live in darkness. So definitely take lots of vitamin D. And you know it, too, in the Midwest, it's winters are hard.
Yeah, I do a D3 4000 like every day from basically Memorial Day, or basically like Labor Day to Memorial Day.
Totally.
And as my mom reminded me the other day, is in any month that has an R in it, you should be taking your vitamin D dose.
Okay, that's good to know.
And it's so true. You'll run through
advice.
It's a really good one. But yeah, no, I figured that was the case. But vitamin D is a thing. So, well, on that note, sure. I am like really deeply grateful for your time on this one. And this is you have an uncanny empathy and presence about you. And on behalf of SAA and the board, we really appreciate the work you do and your advocacy and your assistance and fundraising and all the things you've done to support people like us in the community. So thank you. I've really enjoyed this time with you.
Cool. Thanks, Jill. I appreciate those words. It's been a friendship that started with Sean a couple years ago, and I'm glad that it's keeping going and continues to blossom.
Yeah. Well, keep coming back.
For sure. Will do. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Jill. You as well. Yeah.
Thanks.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.